Welcome to today's Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American, read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. This production is also available at recordinglibrary.org and on the telephone reader by calling 432-617-5555.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Monday, January 27th, 2020. Front page. PBBOR. 2019 is record year for homes sold. Price. By Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at MRT.com. The Midland County housing market set records for homes sold, average price for a home sold, and median price for a home sold in 2019. And just when it appeared the seller's market would take a turn toward balanced, buyers came forward and the market avoided a slowdown. For the year, the Permian Basin Board of Realtors reports 2,543 homes sold, 45 more than the record set last year, an average price of $346,999, more than $20,000 higher than last year, and a median price of $306,644, $15,000 more than last year, and the first year on record that the PBBOR reported an annual median price at or above $300,000. For the years 2017, 2018, and 2019, we were at or just under 2,500 homes sold in each of those years, with little or no noticeable slowdown in the last quarter for any of those years, said Carol Nall, Multiple Listing Service Executive Director and Vice President of Operations for the PBBOR. 2019 was a great year, and 2020 is looking bright. If the market trends toward the buyer in 2020, it might be because of an increase in inventory. In 2019, there was an average of 414 homes on the market at the end of any month. That is an increase of 134 compared to 2018, and the most since 2016. Also, the PBBOR showed 471 homes on the market at the end of December 2019, which was 174 more than at the end of December 2018. The number of days that the average home stayed on the market also increased by 3 in 2019, ending the year at 33 days. As far as inventory, there were more than 540 homes on the market, and those homes that remained have been on the market an average of 74 days. Information also showed 182 new listings were added in December. While inventory for a balanced market is around 6 to 11 months, the Permian Basin Board of Realtors showed inventory went from 3.2 months in November to 2.3 months in December. Veteran realtor Victoria Prince said 2020 has started where 2019 ended, with a healthy number of homes going under contract. I anticipate an excellent first quarter, Prince said. She said prices leveled off some at the end of last year, as is typical of our cycle here in the Permian. Nuclear waste facility in Andrews County selected to store elemental mercury, by Adrian Hedin, Carlsbad Current, Argus, New Mexico. Elemental mercury will be stored at a facility in West Texas after the U.S. Department of Energy selected a nuclear waste disposal company to hold the chemical until technology is developed to treat and permanently dispose of it. Waste Control Specialists, WCS, Andrews facility, was selected in December, per a DOE news release, to store the mercury as the DOE works to achieve its assignment through the 2008 Mercury Export Ban Act, which prohibited the element from being exported from the U.S. as of January 2013. The act also prohibited federal agencies from selling or distributing metallic mercury, including stockpiles held by the DOE and the Department of Defense. A third provision in the act called on the DOE to designate at least one facility for long-term storage and management. That's where WCS came in. Matt LaBarge, the company's vice president of federal programs, said the mercury will come from across the country, from generator sites and gold mines. He said WCS was chosen because it has the right permits and the capacity. To prevent mercury from going to other countries where there's no good storage, they decided to keep it here, he said. We were selected for that process. LaBarge said WCS' current contract with the DOE calls for the waste to be stored for a year and a half, but that could be extended. It could be made longer, he said of the contract. It really depends on the capacity for treatment. He said he was unsure how long the mercury will ultimately be held at the facility as treatment options were being developed. The DOE is a key customer, he said. That's really our motivation. It was something we could to support them. A permit modification to allow WCS to store the mercury was approved on December 27th, records show, while the DOE entered into a lease and service agreement with WCS and created a fee schedule. What is elemental mercury? Elemental mercury is a liquid at room temperatures. It was used in thermometers, dental amalgams, fluorescent light bulbs, and electrical switches. Mercury is also used in mining and some industrial process, per a report from the Centers for Disease Control. The element is released into the air when coal and other fossil fuels are burned. People can be exposed to elemental mercury when they breathe in air containing its vapors. The vapors could be found in dental offices, smelting operations, and locations where it was spilled. Exposure to high doses of elemental mercury can cause severe lung damage, read the report, and low concentrations of vapor over an extended period can cause neurological disturbances, memory problems, skin rash, and damage to the kidneys. Finding a measurable amount of mercury in blood or urine does not mean that levels of mercury cause an adverse health effect, the report read. Biomonitoring studies on levels of mercury provide physicians and public health officials with reference values so that they can determine whether people have been exposed to higher levels of mercury than are found in the general population. Biomonitoring data can also help scientists plan and conduct research about exposure and health effects. Distributed by Tribune Content Agency. Council to vote on plans for new fire stations by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at MRT.com. City officials have estimated construction of two new fire stations in Central and Northwest Midland could begin by April. A major step for that development to take place could happen Tuesday at the Midland City Council meeting. City leaders will consider approving plans and specifications and authorizing the advertisement for proposals for the construction of Midland Fire Department Stations 5 and 11. Construction of the stations are expected to come at a cost of $9.455 million. Of that, $9 million will come from certificates of obligation, council-approved debt. The other $455,000 will come from the city's garage fund. City officials said $923,244 already has been spent on architect, engineering, abatement, demolition, and other expenses. Fire Chief Charles Blumenauer wrote in a support memo that Fire Station 5 will replace a facility constructed in 1958 and Fire Station 11 will help service the fastest-growing part of the city and county. Fire Station 5, at 2210 West Golf Course Road, will be a two-story structure totaling 11,752 square feet, according to the request for a proposal that council members will be voting on Tuesday. Fire Station 11 at 6600 Briarwood Avenue is a one-story structure that is 13,208 square feet. The upgrading of Station 5 and the addition of Station 11 will continue our city's and department's goal of offering the best service to the citizens of Midland, Blumenauer wrote. Agreements with Midland County. Two agreements with Midland County that total $1.9 million also will be in front of the council on Tuesday. The first allows the city to accept Midland County's $1 million donation for the construction of a new animal shelter. The county approved the donation in a special meeting last week. The second calls for the execution of an agreement that provides funding for three fire squad trucks for MFD. The value of each is $330,000. The department, according to agenda documents, is expected to use each squad truck as a quick response rescue vehicle. They carry a full supply of vehicle extraction equipment, fire equipment, and EMS equipment, a city agenda document states. These vehicles are crucial in not only allowing a quick response to city and county runs, but also alleviating wear and tear on larger apparatus in our fleet. The council meeting is set for 10 a.m. Tuesday at Council Chambers inside Midland City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Avenue.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, January 25th. MISD. Intercom not working during MHS lockdown. No gun recovered from scene. Crime Stoppers tip could have been false report, police chief says. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The intercom system at Midland High was not working in parts of the school Thursday during an hour-and-a-half-long lockdown that ended with no gun found at the scene and no charges filed against the student suspect. School administrators were tasked with going door-to-door to alert teachers of the lockdown as a result of the failing intercom, said Jeff Horner, Midland ISD's Executive Director of Secondary Schools, at a press conference Friday morning. He said he did not know which areas of the school were affected and how many students were in classrooms where the intercom wasn't working, but, quote, it was enough that we went throughout the whole building with a team of administrators to make sure everybody knew we were in a lockdown, end quote. James Riggin, Chief Operations Officer at MISD, said the systems in all of MISD's secondary schools, including Midland High, are more than 20 years old and sometimes malfunction. Quote, it's older technology. The system itself with that type of age of technology has issues from time to time, he said. Riggin estimated it would cost about $420,000 to replace the complete system. The cost of the replacement parts would be far less, said Alana Ladd, MISD's Chief Communications Officer. Quote, we are still awaiting an invoice for the cost of the replacement park work, as the work has not been concluded, she said. The parts have been ordered to repair the system, and it will take approximately 2 to 4 weeks to do so, Reagan said. MISD communications specialist Trevor Hawes said the parts were ordered early last week. MISD Police Chief Arthur Barclay said the lockdown began after they received a Crime Stoppers tip that a student had pointed a gun at another student. He said they found it to be a credible tip at the time and felt there was a gun involved. However, MISD police are now considering the possibility it was a false report, and there's a good chance charges could be brought against the tipster if it's determined they intentionally made a false report, Barclay said. He said the school, outside campus, and surrounding perimeter were searched and no weapon was recovered. Horner said the suspected student was not allowed on campus today as the investigation continues, but that, quote, right now what we know about that student is he was just in the wrong place, end quote. He said that while law enforcement officers attempted to locate the suspect, the teenager was participating in the lockdown along with the rest of the student body. The student was not aware anyone was looking for him or trying to hide, Horner said. The student was tardy to class and missed the beginning of the lockdown and was then swept into a classroom, and it took longer than we would have liked to find him, Horner said. He said that student may face disciplinary action for being tardy, but will not face additional repercussions unless the investigation reveals new information. Barclay declined to say if the person who made the Crime Stoppers tip was on campus Friday, or if that person was a student or administrator. He said administrators will debrief after Thursday's events and consider areas of improvement, but so far have not considered placing metal detectors at Midland High's entrances. Quote, whenever you put in metal detectors for any purpose, you have to consider the time factor involved in processing students through a metal detector, he said. Despite an increase in the number of media reports about students charged with either bringing a weapon to school or making threats against other students, both at MISD schools and Ector County ISD schools, Barclay said they have not received more reports of threats than last year. Judge signs order. MISD bond officially fails. The story was written by Brandy Addison. Judge Mackie K. Hancock has signed and mailed back the agreed order from the bond election contest, which requested that the most recent ballot tabulations from January 17th be declared the final outcome, contestant Christine Foreman said. Midland ISD's $569 million bond has officially failed by 26 votes, and the election is over. The newest tabulations included an additional 837 ballots, which were missing during the recount on November 22nd and 23rd. One was stuck in an electronic voting machine, and 836 were in a ballot box that was not discovered until mid-December. Foreman, who was co-chair of the pro-bond committee We Choose Our Future, said the contributions that went unspent during the election campaign will be used to advocate for the next bond. MISD Board President Rick Davis previously told the Reporter Telegram a new bond proposal could be on the ballot as soon as the November election. He said he plans to get the community more involved in the process. Instead of working on the bond proposal and presenting it for community feedback after it was proposed to the school board, the planning committee will seek community feedback during the process so the pros and cons can be noted throughout and the proposal can be refined as it goes. Davis said he is disappointed in the outcome of the election, but he is also optimistic that the community can help propose another bond that would receive more support. Quote, I am, of course, disappointed that we were unable to address our district's capacity, safety and security, technology, and pre-K expansion needs with this bond proposal, and the accompanying academic improvements to be gained from its accompanying grade reconfiguration components and expanded academic curriculum opportunities, David said in an emailed statement. Continuing the quote, However, I am also encouraged by the number of persons who, while they opposed this bond, acknowledged the importance of passing a bond to address those needs and have expressed support for working collaboratively together to formulate a new bond proposal. We are committed to working with them and the entire community to do just that. Because Midland is a can-do community, I am optimistic that we will be successful in formulating a new proposal that will provide much-needed benefits to our students, teachers, and our community's future, Davis said. Better Bond for Midland raises more than $21,000. The story was written by Brandy Addison. Better Bond for Midland filed its campaign finance report on Wednesday, a week after it was due to the Secretary of State, requiring the Special Purpose Action Committee to pay a fine of $500. In the filing period from November 5th to December 31st, the committee raised $11,800. Better Bond for Midland is the committee that opposed Midland ISD's $569 million bond. This brings the total to more than $21,000 between October 6th and December 31st. The total amount of political contributions maintained as of the last day of the reporting period was $2,369.53. The SPAC was not required to submit a report with the Texas Ethics Commission for the first filing period because it didn't have any activity before September 26. Monetary political contributions. The total monetary contributions received from 16 individuals totaled $11,800. Contributions of $250 or more include $2,500 from Lori Winter, $1,500 Scott Gunn, Joan Mazzi, $1,000 Brandon Hodges, David Overton, George Robertson, $500 Thomas Wolfmuller, Alan Harvey, James Burr, Dustin Gregg, $400 Earl Erdman. The political expenditures from political contributions totaled $8,470. Expenditures of $250 or greater include $7,500 for Guest and Gray for legal services, $1,775 for True Texas Elections for consulting expenses, $525 Roger Borgelt for legal services, $362 Hampton Inn and Suites for travel and lodging. Non-political expenditures from political contributions. The political expenditures from political contributions totaled $187. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Saturday, January 25th. Alex Espinosa, age 48, of Midland, passed away on January 22nd at his residence. He was born to Isabel Diaz Avila and the late Ascension Espinosa of Slayton, Texas, on August 28, 1971. Alex is preceded in death by his father and two sons, Rico Espinosa and Giovanni Espinosa. He is survived by his loving wife, Nancy Garcia Espinosa, four sons, Alex Espinosa Jr., Israel Ray Espinosa, and Santos Raul Espinosa, all of Midland, and Angel Santiago Espinosa of Madison, Wisconsin. Three daughters, Alexis Espinosa of Chicago, Illinois, Nayi Guadalupe Espinosa of Midland, and Virginia Rivera of Snyder, Texas. He is also survived by his mother, Isabel Avila of Snyder, two brothers, Freddie Espinosa of Big Spring and Jacob Espinosa of Abilene, two sisters, Nancy Flores and Phyllis Dominguez, both of Snyder, 13 grandchildren, and numerous uncles, aunts, nephews, nieces, and cousins. Viewing will begin Saturday, January 25th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, January 26th, also from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Sunday evening, all at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Celebration Mass is set for Monday, January 27th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Thomas Tom Younger, age 48, of Midland, passed away January 23rd, surrounded by his family. The family will receive guests from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday, January 26th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, January 27th, at Stonegate Fellowship in Midland. Private family burial will be held at Resthaven Memorial Park. This is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Saturday, January 25th. New hire is disappointed to be working as a gopher. Dear Abby, I recently landed a new job and was excited about doing work that would be directly in line with my education and background. I left a job of more than a decade to pursue this field. My problem is, I'm being asked to carry luggage, make coffee, run errands, etc. This was not in my job description, nor was it what I was hired for. Abby, I have worked many intern positions. I do not believe I am too good for any job, but I have worked my way up and have abilities that could contribute greatly to this company. What they have me doing now is not beneficial for me or them. If you believe I should say something, what should it be? I'm afraid they can easily find a substitute who may perform these tasks, as they aren't every day, but it's often enough to make me uncomfortable. It's a small company, and my pay is good, so I don't want to leave. Please advise me, Abby. Signed, Scared to Speak Up. Dear Scared, I see nothing wrong with having a discussion with your employer. However, because you are so new to the job, it should be done delicately. Tell the person you feel you could be contributing more to the company than you are currently doing, but do not complain about the menial tasks. It often falls to the newest member of the team to do these things, and the last thing you want is to be perceived as someone who is not a team player. In time, you will see if this job is the right fit for you. Dear Abby, my dad died of cancer a couple of months ago. While we were a bit estranged, I did love him, and his loss was painful. Despite this, I have accepted things and moved on. The issue is that any time I talk to my friends about it, they assume I'm really in shock. My friends are older, so I suspect that they think it's because I'm only 22, but it's frustrating that they disregard my personal growth and the way I've dealt with his death. I realize I have moved on fairly quickly, but the way I see it, death is a part of life, and what's done is done. How can I explain to them that while I'm sad, I have accepted what happened without sounding like I didn't care about my dad? Signed, Moved On in the West. Dear Moved On, point out to your well-meaning friends that your relationship with your father may not have been like the ones they had with their fathers, that you were a bit estranged may have made his death less traumatic than if he had been a major part of your life. It should not be necessary to put on a display of sackcloth and ashes. Everyone grieves differently, so remind them of that. Happy New Year to my Asian friends who celebrate the Lunar New Year. The year of the rat begins today. I wish a happy, healthy New Year to all who celebrate this holiday. People born in the year of the rat are said to be instinctive, acute, and alert, which makes them exceptional in business. They are sophisticated and popular in social interaction, but they can sometimes be stubborn and picky. Notable individuals born in the year of the rat include not only George Washington, Wolfgang Mozart, William Shakespeare, and Charlotte Bronte, but also Gwyneth Paltrow, Ben Affleck, Eminem, Prince Charles of Britain, and his son, Prince Harry. Supervisor makes imaging her life's work. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Armed with an interest in mammography, Becky Wiscombe has risen to supervisor of the Center for Women's Imaging at Medical Center Hospital, and she said she feels like she is making a difference in women's lives. In her 23rd year in women's imaging, Wiscombe has been a mammography technologist for 22 years and an X-ray technologist for 23. The hospital offers bone density testing, mammography, and breast biopsies. Wiscombe says she has three technologists at the main campus and two at the Center for Health and Wellness. One of the techs at Health and Wellness also does computed tomography, or CTs. Their schedule generally has between 40 and 50 exams. Quote, finding a breast cancer early can make a huge difference in a woman's prognosis and diagnosis of her disease and treatment, Wiscombe said. Knowing that you make a difference, that's the biggest part of it. End of quote. Quote, when we do find something early, that's a great feeling. Plus, the girls I work with are awesome. We've had some come and go, but we have a great, great family here. We're all really, really close, and it's just a family department, really. And it's all women, which makes it really nice. We get along really well here, she added. When she first started, she thought everybody was the same, but everyone is different. Quote, we use different paddles on different sizes or different areas of the breast. We can use different techniques of positioning, Wiscombe said. Quote, of course the machine moves in every direction, so that makes it a lot easier. Dr. Mason Hicks is our radiologist. He is wonderful at helping us to figure out exactly how we need to take care of that patient and what he needs to make a good diagnosis for that patient, end quote. The paddles Wiscombe is referring to are the compression paddles that come down on the breast that are hooked to the machine. Quote, we have all different sizes and shapes of those that do different things from just regular mammography to magnification views so we can look at something and make it look bigger than it actually is, or spot compression views where we can push the tissue out of the way so we can see something more clearly, Wiscombe said. Quote, we have a large paddle for the larger-breasted women. We have a smaller paddle for the smaller breast, she added. Mammograms are also conducted for men. Quote, usually there's three or four men every month that come in with a lump in the breast. People don't know that men can actually get breast cancer, and we've had a couple that have been diagnosed here at Medical Center that have had breast cancer. We've even had some ladies who will tell us of their family history that their father or their brother had breast cancer. It's not as common, of course, as it is in women, but it does occur. We have different sized paddles for men as well. The men have more muscle in the breast. Women have more fatty tissue, but we can still get great pictures on men with the paddles that we have, she said. More people are requesting 3D mammograms. Quote, 3D has made a huge impact in mammography. Most ladies want the 3D in the state of Texas. It's now law that the insurance companies have to cover 3D, so that's made a big impact on healthcare for women, because before, some insurance companies weren't covering it, Wiscombe said. The old way of conducting mammographs was on film. Then it moved to digital, and they were able to see through the breast a bit better, Wiscombe said. Quote, but with 3D, it's compared to CT, but it's not a CT because it takes slices of pictures through the breast, she said. It's still an extremely low-dose X-ray, but it takes tiny little slices through the breast so that you can see from this slice to that slice where something could be located. A lot of times we see things when we press the breast from top to bottom or side to side. Things get overlapping. Then when you do the CT part or the 3D part, tomosynthesis, it separates all of that, end quote. She noted that 3D mammograms have helped a lot to be able to see through a breast more clearly. Digital also has made the process faster. Quote, we can see through the breast in tiny increments. It's improved so much in just 20 years, Wiscombe said. Using digital means less exposure for the patient because you don't have to repeat the images. It's easier on the technologist because they're not carrying cassettes back and forth, and with tomosynthesis, it's come even further. Wiscombe says a mammogram should not cause a lot of excessive pain. Quote, there are women who do have more pain issues than others, more sensitivity to compression. But we really try to work really hard not to compress someone to the point of pain, Wiscombe said. The more compression you get, the better the image, and the brief discomfort can save your life, she said. Quote, but we don't want to cause too much discomfort for the patient and mammography. I mean, really, you think a mammogram hurts more than having breast cancer and breast surgery and all of that? It's only a few seconds of just a little bit of discomfort, and most of us can get through that pretty easily, Wiscombe said. There are a lot of financial programs to help pay for mammograms, and Pink the Basin is one of the best in the country, she said. Quote, I couldn't say enough about them. They made a huge difference for the ladies of this area and the Permian Basin. Pink the Basin is amazing, Wiscombe said. She noted that 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. Quote, it's so important to get them mammograms done every year, Wiscombe said. Some women who are 75 or 80 ask if they can stop getting mammograms, but Wiscombe noted that doctors say most cancers are found in women over the age of 65. For a screening mammogram, Wiscombe said Dr. Hicks likes to read them within a week, but it's usually 3 to 5 days, so patients should get a letter within a week to 10 days. With a diagnostic mammogram, results are given the same day. Quote, they have to be read within 30 days, but we're way quicker than that, Wiscombe said. That's way too long to have to wait, end quote. Wiscombe added that there is always something new to learn in mammography. Quote, we did needle localization in patients where we place a wire in the breast through a needle, through mammography placement, or with ultrasound placement to find an area that we've already diagnosed as breast cancer so that the patient can go to surgery and the doctor can go strictly to that little area and take that area out, she said. Quote, they have an item called a Savvy Scout needle, and it has a little reflector on the end of it, and when we place that needle in and put the reflector in the breast, the surgeon uses a reflector paddle that finds it, and he can go right in and take that reflector out. It's much easier on the patient. They don't have a wire in their breast. They don't have to come across from the hospital to have it done. They can have it done 2 or 3 days prior to surgery, even a month prior to surgery, so it makes it much easier. There's always some new technology coming out that's better for women's health and mammography in general, Wiscom said. Carol Evans, MCH Director of Radiology, said you can rest assured that the mammography technologists at MCH Center for Women's Imaging are highly qualified to do their jobs. Quote, in addition to excellent skills, they are passionate about identifying breast cancer in its earliest stages and work diligently to provide high-quality imaging to the radiologist for interpretation. Add to that their compassion for their patients, their drive to make the procedure as pleasant as possible, and it is evident that we have an excellent team of mammographers working to meet your personal needs, Evans said in an email. Low T got you down? This was written by Levi Stone, Chief Nursing Officer. After age 40, men can start finding themselves with less energy, increased body fat, decreased muscle tone, feeling more depressed, and experiencing a lower sex drive. The reason may be due to low testosterone, also known as low T, or hypogonadism, which has become more prevalent over the past 2 decades. Testosterone is a naturally occurring hormone which gives men the characteristics of being a man. It's responsible for guys being able to grow facial hair, have deeper voices, and develop stronger muscles, just to name a few. So why do certain men have low testosterone, and why is it becoming more common than in years past? In a regular, typical male, testosterone production begins as the fetus grows inside the womb, gradually increases as boys enter adolescence, and peaks in their late teens and early 20s. From there, testosterone levels stay steady but begin to decline at a rate of 1 or 2% per year as men enter their 30s. While this is a normal part of aging, some men can see a sharper decline and the effects of low testosterone can be more pronounced and obvious. There are several variables, some that can be controlled and others that cannot, which causes testosterone levels to nosedive, resulting in men being physically and mentally out of sorts. However, one of the main factors is that men are less healthy than we were years ago. In many instances, low testosterone levels are directly influenced by the lifestyle choices men choose to make, particularly in regards to diet and exercise, or lack thereof. Eating poorly and not exercising regularly have lasting consequences in such forms as obesity and diabetes, both of which have a common link among men who experience lower testosterone production. Insulin spikes can wreak havoc on testosterone level, which means men should avoid processed foods at all costs. These types of foods are typically heavy in refined sugars and unhealthy fats, both of which can cause blood sugars to spike and send insulin levels soaring. Instead, eat clean by opting for fresh produce and lean proteins to optimize the body's ability to function its best to produce testosterone naturally. Another way to raise testosterone naturally is by exercising regularly and often. Strength training should be a major component to any exercise program aimed at boosting testosterone levels. Experts suggest getting more out of your strength training workouts by incorporating as many muscle groups as possible by rotating them throughout the week, using heavier weights, and shortening the intervals between sets. However, like anything else, too much of something can have an opposite effect and end up being a bad thing. When muscles are overworked by working out excessively, a stress hormone known as cortisol increases and can actually work in opposition to testosterone. Muscles need periods of rest to adequately repair, rebuild, regenerate, and recover. Take advantage of those off days and schedule an appointment with your doctor to explore other options that may be necessary to better manage your testosterone levels. While diet and exercise go a long way, other factors in which men can't control are also causes for low testosterone. Examples include traumatic injury to the testicles, chronic illness affecting organs such as the liver and kidneys, conditions that impact other hormone-producing glands such as the thyroid, hypothalamus, or pituitary, and those who had delays in puberty. Men with autoimmune disorders are also at greater risk of having low T, as are those who take certain types of medications, such as chemotherapy drugs. Your physician can help pinpoint the exact cause and, more importantly, discuss the most appropriate treatment options. If testosterone replacement therapy is indicated, let your physician be the one to provide the proper guidance and supervision needed to ensure an effective, safe treatment regimen. While it may be enticing to try to self-diagnose and treat with over-the-counter options, supplements on the market claiming to boost testosterone are either ineffective or can be downright dangerous. Testosterone levels need to be monitored routinely to make any necessary adjustments in achieving normal levels consistent to a man's age. Your doctor can safely and accurately monitor those levels while prescribing the right testosterone replacement therapy for you. Nearly one in four men over the age of 30 experience low testosterone. While men should expect that lower levels of testosterone are a standard part of aging, levels that fall below normal and carry symptoms, particularly depression, irritability, chronic fatigue, and/or difficulty focusing and concentrating, are worth addressing. Low T can be a delicate subject for many men, but it's important to know they are not alone in dealing with the issue. With a proper diagnosis and treatment, they can soon start feeling more like themselves and get their overall health back on track. This is the medical advice column, To Your Good Health, by Dr. Keith Roach. Dear Dr. Roach, I have heard that fish oil can clog the arteries and cause problems, but I've also heard it's good to take. I don't know if it is good or bad. Can you help me out with this? Answer. There remains controversy about fish oil, but recent studies prompted the U.S. Food and Drug Administration Advisory Committee to recommend wider use of a prescription fish oil. These new studies show that icosapent ethyl, VASEPA, a highly purified fish oil ester, reduced the risk of cardiovascular events by 5% and lowered the risk of cardiovascular death by 0.9% in people with high triglycerides, known coronary artery disease, diabetes, and at least one other risk factor, despite the use of statin drugs. For people with higher than average risk of heart disease and high triglycerides despite statin therapy, I believe fish oil or fish oil-based pharmaceuticals has a role to play in reducing the risk of heart attack, stroke, and death that will be further revealed in the next few years. COPD encompasses a variety of ailments. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is an umbrella of respiratory ailments from emphysema to chronic asthma and bronchitis. Quote, when you have continuing infections like that, it causes damage to the lungs, so it kind of gets umbrellaed under the COPD, cardiopulmonary patient educator Sandra Reyes said. Quote, the number one cause of COPD is smoking. It's pollutants in the air. You can get those from work. There is one genetic piece of COPD, Reyes said. Among the symptoms of COPD are coughing with or without phlegm, wheezing, and shortness of breath. Quote, there is no cure for it, but it is treatable and preventable, Reyes said. By preventable, Reyes means not smoking, wearing a mask, or having well-ventilated workspaces if you work with pollutants like sawdust. Quote, a lot of it, too, is respiratory infections. You don't want to get sick all the time, so you need to make sure to get your flu shot and pneumonia vaccine, she said. Reyes says regions of the state are just now starting to keep track of COPD, so there isn't an accurate number of the prevalence statewide. But about 5.4 to 5.5% of the state's population has COPD. Hand hygiene also is important. A pulmonary function test can be conducted to determine what disease under COPD they have and how severe it is. Quote, that's probably the most important, is getting in and getting that test done, because it will help, too, with the medications. So once you get tested, you get confirmed that you're diagnosed, we can go at that point and prescribe the correct medication that you need. The bad thing about COPD is because of the symptoms, shortness of breath, coughing, a lot of people think it's just aging, Reyes said. Quote, once you get diagnosed and we put you on the right medication, then we really encourage our patients to do pulmonary rehab. We have that at medical center, she added. There is no cure for COPD, she said. It's a progressive disease. Quote, the more that you take care of yourself, it will progress slowly, Reyes said. If you continue to smoke or keep getting infections or pneumonia, your lungs are going to progressively get worse. Quote, what we try to do with our patients is help them avoid any triggers that will cause them to have an exacerbation. We'll get them on the medications that they need, she said. Screening questions are given to patients to help determine how far the disease has progressed. Quote, they're simple questions like, do you have a cough? Have you felt short of breath? Have you smoked 100 cigarettes in your entire life? If the number's pretty low on the screener, if you're 0 to 4, you're at low risk, and 5 to 10, you're at high risk. We just encourage patients to take the screener to the doctor and say, I need to get tested because I think most of the time the doctors are going to think you might have GERD. That's why you keep coughing, or you might have a touch of asthma or something. They really need to go in and get that test done, Reyes said. GERD stands for Gastroesophageal Reflux Disease, WebMD.com said. You can get COPD from secondhand smoke. Quote, it used to be a man's disease, but now it's a woman's disease. It goes back to cigarette advertising, which was aimed at men in the 40s and 50s, Reyes said. The advertising changed after more women entered the workforce, and now they have COPD. Quote, a lot of them, if they didn't smoke, they were getting it from their husband's secondhand smoke, Reyes said. Flu, colds, and sinus infections can exacerbate COPD, so people with COPD should avoid people with the flu, wash their hands, or use hand sanitizer. Quote, stay away from people that are sick. It's the best thing to do. That's kind of really hard with COPD patients because they're in an older stage of life. At that point in life, they have grandkids. Everybody wants to see the grandkids. If they're sick, I have to tell my patients, you need to stay away from them, Reyes said. Former MISD teacher found not guilty of child abandonment. The story was written by Brandy Addison. A former Midland ISD teacher was found not guilty on two counts of child abandonment Thursday afternoon in the 142nd District Court at the Midland County Courthouse, 15 months after her employer, MISD, pressed charges on her. Megan McMurray says she has an active grievance against the school district and now plans to file suit for a civil case against it. In October 2018, McMurray flew to Kuwait for 5 days to talk to a school about a job opportunity. Her husband, who is a soldier, was previously stationed there but had just been moved to Syria. During her trip, she left her two children, a 14-year-old daughter and 12-year-old son, to be cared for by her friends who lived in the same apartment complex, though the children and caregivers agreed the children would stay at their own apartment each night. Her daughter had just begun homeschooling and would remain there during the day as well. McMurray said the MISD Police Department went to the residence and took the daughter to Abel Junior High, which was McMurray's place of work, for questioning. She said her daughter was denied the right to speak to her parents for 4 hours while she was being interrogated by the MISD Police Department. Quote, they took her from her own home, put her in a cop car, and treated her like a criminal, McMurray said. Then they paraded her through the front of the school where I was employed and where she wasn't even a student, end quote. She said her daughter has attended counseling ever since because of the stress this experience has caused her. Child Protective Services also met with the daughter at the junior high that day and released her to the neighbors, McMurray said. MISD's police department continued to press criminal charges on McMurray, and in December 2018, McMurray turned herself in to the county jail because there was a warrant out for her arrest. She said she spent 19 hours in the jail. She and her lawyers said CPS determined in its investigation that there was no probable cause to determine she is guilty of child abandonment. McMurray was an employee of MISD at the time, but was placed on administrative leave pending investigation. She said she had resigned before the investigation because she was considering the position in Kuwait, but the Human Resources Department allowed her to continue her employment until she decided that she was going to take the job. The jury unanimously approved on both counts that McMurray was not guilty of child abandonment. McMurray thanked the jury. Quote, "I get to have my life back now," she said, with tears in her eyes.
That's the end of the first hour of the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American. We'll begin our second hour right after we take a look at weather.